Spencer Coburn's The Bald Truth.
I've been having a lot more questions on my YouTube channel and through email about topical finasteride. Now, I know that you and I were talking about this kind of, we touched on this, was about a week ago, week and a half ago we were talking. But I'd like to know more about, you know, your thoughts on topical finasteride. You're working with a compounding pharmacy on a formulation that you recommend for your patients. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Absolutely. So topical finasteride is something that's been talked about in the industry from way back when. Everybody was thinking, well, gosh, if it's so dangerous, you know, that a woman can't touch it, birth defects and all of that business going to go right through the skin, why don't we make it a topical for patients? And these questions mm-hmm. were asked even amongst the Merck Advisory Board many, many years ago. And, of course, there was no way they were going to produce it. FDA is never going to let a topical finasteride be approved as a drug. So we have to turn to our compounding pharmacists to make that happen. Now, with the advent of all of the hype about side effects with finasteride orally, even though we know that we don't see a lot of that in the practice, it's similar to what was described in the clinical trials, you know, about 3%, 2% of patients across the board with oral, about 1 milligram finasteride. I do see a lot of patients who are scared and they don't want to take finasteride systemically. They don't want to take that as an oral medication. And so we right. did go to the compounder, the one that I've been using for many, many years, who created the 82M. And you may – on the West Coast, it's called Z82, but 82M, mm-hmm. the same stuff. That's our minoxidil plus Retin-A plus fluocinolone and a couple of other – and antioxidants and hair conditioner, skin conditioner, and you name it in there. Really, really powerful minoxidil, way better than Rogaine, quick dry, non-greasy, fast absorb, super turbo minoxidil. And we said to the compounder, hey, can you put finasteride in this for us? And they're like, yeah, well, let's try it. And so we based the formulation on a lot of the data that was coming out of the Far East. I think there's some Korean studies as well as some Japanese studies that talked about 0.25%. So we started with that. And, of course, we can change. We can modify if we want. We can go stronger if we want. But usually we start with the 0.25%. Because it is in the minoxidil base, they're going to use it twice a day. So right. and what we know from the clinical literature is it seems that there is less load of finasteride in the serum. And so that may explain why we're seeing fewer incidents of side effects with the topical finasteride. Is it right. Are you going to be immune to side effects from topical finasteride? No, I would never tell a patient that. There's always a chance, just like there's a chance of having sexual side effects from saw palmetto. And I've seen that in my practice as well. So if you're super sensitive to a 5-alpha reductase blocker, right, that's the mechanism of finasteride, and potentially maybe saw palmetto, we don't know for sure, but maybe, you know, you might still have a side effect with topical finasteride. But it's a little bit easier to titrate down when you're applying it topically, I think. So,
right. And you know, patients are liking it. The way I've been describing it, and this is, you know, just generally speaking, is that, you know, with anything that you're taking orally, if you're having side effects, mm-hmm. doesn't matter what it is, your incidence of side effects will be greatly reduced if you have a topical alternative of that same medication. But at the same time, the efficacy of that alternative will also likely be reduced on some level. And so, you know, I'm always getting the question, well, is it as effective? In my view, I don't think it would be, only because, you know, orally it's getting more to the root of the issue, pardon the pun. Mm-hmm. So I think there's probably I can't say it's a linear correlation, but I'm sure there's a correlation in reduced side effects along with reduced efficacy. But is the efficacy strong enough to make it worthwhile for patients? I think it is, because I've seen results with various formulations, not any particular formulation, but various formulations of topical finasteride that do work. Mm-hmm. But I also have spoken to patients that have had side effects with at least one topical formulation that I know of. Mm-hmm. So you know, it is dependent on the sensitivity.
Correct.
To the patient, and it's all an individualized scenario, of course, but. It's interesting, and I'm going to be diving more into it myself. I might even do one of my next few videos about the subject, because it is getting a lot of interest from a lot of viewers, a lot of people emailing, a lot of people that call the show, and of course on the forums. So, you know, your input on this, I think, is very valuable because you're on the front lines with that.
888-659-3727. Let's see who this is. Hey, man, you're on the air. Who's this and where are you calling from?
It's Maury's Wigs from Brooklyn.
Maury. Right, Maury, how are you, man? What's going on?
Not much, man. Yo, I'm so glad that you played that at the end because you made me you made my night.
I'm glad.
Yeah. And I'm enjoying the hell out of calling in here. So if I get to be too much, you just you know, you tell me to go
Dude,
away.
This is like the second time you called, man. And your name,
you brought him back with that Maury's Wigs.
And your name is Mordecai, right? Mordecai.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you can call me Morty, so yeah. It works. Cool.
We like having Jews call on the show. I mean, there's two in the room right now. I don't know any other Jews. You know, I've been with a Panamanian and Mexican chick for 17 years. So this is a good thing.
Bueno, es bueno que estás con una latinoamericana, porque yo soy mitad
colombiano. Ay, babe, come on.
No, I am. But yeah. I'm happy Passover to both of you.
Happy Passover to you.
Yes, thank you. Once again, I got an email out to Joe, and once again, he hit a home run with an answer. So I had a whole bunch of questions. He answered most of them, but I wanted to bring some of the ones that are related to the
I hope you weren't giving him an IQ test because
that might
not have worked out quite as well.
It'd take too long.
Yeah.
What's the question, Mordecai?
What's the question?
Okay, the questions were around the IAHRS questions that I posed to you. They had to do with
let me cut you off there. I didn't answer IAHRS questions because that's something I wanted you to call in about.
Oh, cool. Okay,
Okay, so,
great. So then it worked out.
It worked.
All right, so what's the question?
All right, so there's a few of them. One of them was, does the IAHRS provide a process for gathering patient complaints about its members?
Yes, we do.
And two, okay, do the members have a uniform procedure for handling complaints from patients?
Say that again.
Do the members have a uniform procedure for handling complaints from patients?
Yeah, they have to actually deal with me. And as far as, you know, how they decide to deal with the complaint, I provide them with the best suggestion as far as what I think should be done. If they end up doing something that I'm unhappy with, then they're out.
Are you asking like all complaints or just complaints that go through the IAHRS? Because, you know, all complaints in general, then no, there's not a standardized system. But
no, he's talking about the IAHRS.
But complaints that do go through IAHRS, then yeah, there's a standard.
Yeah. Essentially, this is the way that it works. We try to adjudicate as many complaints as possible if the complaints are within our jurisdiction. Meaning, if you have a complaint about price, that's your problem. If you have a complaint about, you know, maybe the receptionist was nasty to you, then that's your problem. Maybe what we'll do is say, hey, look, you know, I'll call the doc and say, you might want to check out your receptionist. We got a complaint about your receptionist. If it's a complaint about the work itself or aftercare, things of that nature, things that we believe is within our jurisdiction, then we do our best to adjudicate it and help the patient. We've gotten patients refunds many times, but there is a usual process, and it's not the IHRS process, but in most cases, if a patient is unhappy with the procedure and expects a refund, most physicians will have them sign essentially a legal document stating that they will not go online and try to disparage them if they do decide to accept this settlement, so to speak. And that's pretty common. So, mm-hmm. You know, if one of our doctors decides to do that, we're not going to, you know, say, hey, look, you know, you can't do that. You know, you don't want to try to appease somebody. You know, anybody can make a mistake, have a bad day. And it would be probably pretty frightening for any physician to say, okay, you know what, we're going to give back this guy $20,000, apologize, things didn't work out, and then have somebody on your ass for the rest of your life, even though you did your best to help them. So that's usually what transpires. And I don't know if Dr. B can get more involved. I know you don't have to deal with this too often yourself.
Well, I've treated probably about almost 20,000 patients and operated about 8,000 hair transplant surgeries and almost 4,000 PRPs. So all I can say is that you want to choose your physician that has a patient-centered practice. And I pride myself and our team. You know, we have 20 people in the practice, Bauman Medical. I'm the only physician. I have nurse practitioner, medical team, administrative, patient services team. And our primary core value is that we're there to take care of patients first. So in the midst of a patient-centric practice, I will tell you that if a patient has a question or a concern or a complaint, we are pretty well able to handle that inside the office. And thankfully, it's very, very few and far between over many, many years. I'm knocking on wood, but it's very rare that that situation would happen. So, but that's just how we handle things at Bauman Medical, and we are keen on. We want everybody to be a raving fan. So, if they're not a raving fan, then we will do whatever it takes to make that patient happy. And that's how we do it. But we want you to have a great result and have a great experience too. Not just a great result, but a great experience at the practice.
Look, I can tell you this. The bottom line is there is not a doctor who practices or performs surgery that has not had an unhappy patient. That's just the way that it
exactly.
is.
Exactly.
And
good point.
And I think the bottom line is you have to do your due diligence and also understand that, you know what, this is cosmetic surgery, and I can get fucked up even under the best circumstances. It could just happen. There could be physiological issues that I'm dealing with that the doctor's unaware of or whatever. You know, he can give you every test. He can use his best judgment. He could have treated 30,000 patients, and you could be the anomaly. And I tell everybody that you have people do not, and that's why it bothers me that it's turned into such a commodity. This is real surgery. This is so life changing, in fact, that and this is not to diminish, say, breast augmentation, but the truth is, at least in my view, usually if you have a the average bad boob job, you can probably get them a woman could probably get them fixed to the point where she looks normal and she's comfortable again in most cases. The worst case scenario, she at least gets to cover up her breasts, and when she's out in public.
It's not broadcast to the world.
Right. Guys are broadcasting the hair of the world. And also you are dealing with a finite amount of tissue and hair that can be moved. And once that is wasted – and you're basically using the rest to try to either camouflage or fix the initial damaged results. So it's a big deal that you really have to think about. I know, Dr. B, you're looking at me and you're agreeing, you're shaking your head.
No, I agree completely. I'm just thinking, what would I how would I explain that to your listeners? How would they know if they were like high risk patients who have had previous work that they're unhappy with for whatever reason? It could have been a scar tissue that they had, their available donor supply or quality of hair, their compliance with medical regimens to slow, stop, or reverse their hair loss process. Those are things that can throw a wrench into the works. And not to say that those patients we don't operate on, of course we do. We understand that there are going to be limitations. So you should have a heart-to-heart discussion with your surgeon that you choose about what are the limitations of the process that you're proposing. And that would be my guidance to the listeners out there on Ball Truth that,
So, and Giovanni and sorry, Morty, we'll get back to you, but I want to address Giovanni's question in the chat room. He says, what are some of the doctor clinic errors or problems that can go wrong with a surgery that turns out to be a failure? Well, I think the number one thing that can go wrong is not educating the patient beforehand. Even if it's a successful result in the eyes of most people, the patient can think it's a failure because expectations weren't properly set. But surgically, I mean, there's a whole list of things that can go wrong. Mishandling of the grafts, for one thing, on many levels, too much transection, assuming FUE, in the donor zone due to, the wrong punch being used or, forceps, not being used properly to extract the grafts, You know, there's so many issues just in that aspect of the procedure. And then there's with recipient site creation, the incisions can be too deep, too close, a combination of the two. One of the things I run into or I've run into for many years is patients going in expecting and this is on both sides, but expecting that a specific density numbers laid out per square centimeter, which is also, I think, the wrong way to go about things. And then not realizing that patients can't always get a X number of grafts per square centimeter because skin tissue itself is highly variable. And when you're making incisions really close together, the connective tissue in between two incisions can literally just dissolve. Because it's not – I mean, Dr. B can chime in on this and
– Yeah, you're amazing. I mean, that's you know, that's incredible information and 100% correct. And just think about how much the skin, let's say, could expand if you put a little bit of fluid into that skin. And that variability is huge depending on the age of the patient and their genetics. So you could think – you could promise the patient X number of density, phenomenal density. But if their skin doesn't expand a little bit – and that's a, you know, one of the techniques that we use to try to get a little bit more density into an area. Like you know, so your listeners can understand, like expanding a balloon with air, making dots on the balloon and then letting the air out of the balloon, those dots look much closer together, right?
Yeah.
Once the air is out of the balloon. Same thing can happen with the grafts. But if you can't put as much air into the balloon, it's a fixed amount of air that you can put in – it's not going to spread the tissue. And so you're not going to get the density. But here's another thing that I think is really critical for listeners to understand is that it's not just necessarily the density that gives the coverage, but it's the angles that make a huge difference. Because think about the swirl on the back of your head. If all those hairs were perpendicular, you'd have no coverage. And it's really the angles in that swirl pattern, the arc patterns of the way that those hairs lay down one on top of another that gives the shingling effect of coverage. And that happens also at the hairline, at the mid scalp, in the frontal forelock, and all of those different zones. You have to get those hairs to shingle down one on top of another to get the appropriate coverage. And that was one of the limitations of the old plugs, is that many of those hairs couldn't be put in a sharp angle. They're grown perpendicularly from the scalp, and so you get like a forest of palm trees. You can always see right through them.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say that, and you are probably seeing more of this coming back into your practice, more repair patients. I'm seeing it more than ever that the work that's being done today, especially by – and you are an FUE, basically an FUE-only guy, but you have the infrastructure and the experience and the ability to perform strip and – You know that's how you started.
Correct.
So, I mean, you made a conscious decision to move towards FUE for, you know, reasons that you've explained in the past. Mm-hmm. But these guys who are now jumping into the FUE world and just buying a turnkey device and hiring technicians who may not have done anything else but FUE, and, you know, doctors who don't understand the angles and the fact that hair should not be growing out of your scalp, you know, perpendicular angles, you know.
Anywhere.
Yeah, anywhere. And you know, I'm seeing two hair grafts, three hair grafts, really pluggy grafts. It doesn't matter that it's being extracted via FUE. FUE and these devices is not what makes hair transplantation state of the art today.
So true. So true. Yeah, we're seeing a lot of corrective work now, again, as a surge in corrections that need to be accomplished, and it could be a lack of artistry, hairline design mistakes, temporal point errors, you know, not tying it into the temple areas, you know, so many. And these are just novice mistakes, as you say, from people who are inexperienced in hairline design. I mean, you can't just toss away the fact that those of us who've done this for 20 years have gone to, you know, let's just say 9 out of 10 of every ISHRS conference, we walk away with a lot of information from those conferences and a lot of information about the artistry and technology, angulation, hairline design, and that information is provided, and then that information is solidified in our practice because we're doing so much work. We're doing, you know, two cases a day, whatever it might be, and we're putting it into action. So if you're going to someone who's never been to those ISHRS conferences, never been to where they're talking about hairline design and execution, and they think that just harvesting the grafts without a scalpel and without stitches, and that's the hair transplant, Wow.
Well, that's
going to be a big problem.
That is exactly
what – that's a recipe for disaster.
That is exactly what they think. And I want to play something for you. You said that you –
That's like thinking that getting the paint from the paint store makes you an artist.
Exactly.
And real quick, sorry, is Morty still on the line?
Morty, you still there? Morty, I think Morty hung up.
I think I hung up. Sorry, Morty.
Hold on. Morty. Wait a second. I may have put him on hold. Morty, call back. 888-659-3727. Guys, before we take some more calls, and I will take your calls in a second, Morty, please call back. Sorry that Joe commandeered your time, as he usually does. I want to see Dr. B's face when I play him this. This was from a slide, and the slide itself is pretty compelling to look at. But I was asked to give a talk here in Los Angeles about how to grow a successful hair transplant practice. And I chose to do something a little different. I guess it was unorthodox. I was able to – I noticed
you?
That.
You? Unorthodox? Yeah,
I noticed that because I chose to tell the truth.
He walked on stage in a robe and slippers.
Exactly. And a pipe. And I chose to tell the truth and really educate these physicians who were potentially getting into hair transplant surgery about the entire scope and possible pitfalls of doing this. And you could have a practice for 10 years. You could be sold a turnkey device. And okay – forget about, and I'm not saying to forget about it, but not only are you putting the lives of your patients in jeopardy, signing off on a surgery that you're probably never going to be involved in, but you are putting your practice in jeopardy. And I have seen guys, they've come to me in a panic, who've purchased one of these turnkey devices, whether it's a NeoGraft or a SmartGraft or whatever they purchased, even some of the smaller footprint devices, higher techs, usually through these companies though. And now they are being destroyed online. These are guys who've never had a single complaint. These are guys who are board-certified plastic surgeons. One guy is a facial plastic and reconstructive guy that does noses. Basically, he's known for his noses. And he ended up getting one of these machines, and it's all over. You screw up one guy, that could be the end of your career, especially if you don't understand why it happened. And, there's this – and I've spoken about this before – there's this psychological, emotional equation that goes into every patient's head. It's almost subconscious, from the phone call, the initial contact to your office, to speaking to your reception, your receptionist, to having a consultation, and then if they decide to have surgery, every step along the way, if one thing is off and that surgery is not even – it doesn't even have to be that bad. All of a sudden, all hell breaks loose, and they truly believe that the doctor is to blame for their unhappiness. Whereas if everything was done correctly, they may be like, wait a second, maybe something went wrong. And they kind of, look at things differently. Anyway, I wanted to give these people this really experienced technician's point of view and perspective of what's happening in the industry today. So take a listen to this.
I have seen things that I can't unsee. And in the last year or so, I've started working more and more with doctors who have bought into this idea of, we can buy this expensive piece of equipment and go and just run with it without, taking time to learn anything or train their staff. I know what I'm about to say is kind of a very critical statement, but what these physicians who are interested in just buying an expensive piece of equipment and jumping into hair transplant, what they're being sold is a lie. It is a blatant lie, and it may not be intentional. You can get started with a tool that's less expensive if you just find the right team to kind of support you and help you get going. Then you have monies left for marketing. You have monies left for, for finding someone to do your consultations or help you with your consultations. Who knows what's going on, instead of, just like, here's some materials on what we offer and offering them a menu like they can choose what they want. When in reality, as a physician, it's your job to assess or to have people who can help you assess each patient and figure out what the best course of treatment is for them. I think we tell patients to do their research And I think when we're in the medical community, we need to do the same thing. And not that there's anything wrong with big device companies or these, you know, expensive pieces of equipment, but the bottom line is the people who are coming to you to talk to you about them are salespeople, and they're trying to sell you something. And as a physician, you need to take a step back and look at your practice and evaluate what your code of ethics is and what, you know, what you think is morally right, and figure out if that device and what they offer align with what you believe. Doctors are buying into the idea that transplants are easy and they can do whatever they want, however they want, and it doesn't affect the results. And the unfortunate part for patients is it takes a year to see for everything to heal, for grafts to be growing. So patients have no idea. They have no idea what's happened to them until it's too late.
Now, this is from a person who performs surgery every single day. And she was brave enough to come out, even though I had her in the shadows. Mm-hmm. And we did some more segments, and it's going to be our undercover tech segments. And I've actually had some other girls who agreed to come on as well. And, you know, I will tell you this, that, you know, you're on like a dais when you're doing these talks, and you're on a panel, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm watching everybody else speak before me, and all these doctors are on their phones, or they're taking notes, or they're mm-hmm. looking at their iPads. All eyes were on me during this talk, and they were just riveted by just the reality of what could happen. And I made it clear. I said, look, I am not a device hater. I'm not even going to say it on the air, but I told them the amount that I made from Restoration Robotics as a consultant. And I said, look, my whole thing is none of these things are turnkey. You have chosen to use a NeoGraft. You have chosen to use a robot. You have chosen now to offer SmartGraft. Your job, and you're, at least from what I'm seeing, is you are trying to get every tool possible to make the patient's experience the best experience that they could have. And only someone who has the skill, understands the parameters, has the right staff, the right team, can make that happen. And these people who are buying these devices are not making it happen. And that was proof positive that, you know, a lot of these guys, they get into it and they are being sold a lie because they don't realize
Realize the intricacy of the procedure.
Right.
You know, I think that the procedure has gotten a lot easier for patients to go through.
Yes.
For sure. And so sometimes that message is mixed up with how difficult or hard it is to provide the procedure. I mean, I know what we do. You know, a hair transplant's a 20-man-hour job. It's a symphony of detail between five people over the course of 6 to 8 hours.
I'm going to steal that line. I like that.
I love that comment. Yeah, it's a symphony of detail.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it is. And we, you know, you have to pass the baton to the right person at the right time, and they need to know their role, their responsibility, and all of that. I mean, it's I think, you know, look, you would never have a general surgery team in a large teaching hospital go out and buy a Da Vinci robot and give it to their dermatology department. You know, I mean, a Da Vinci robot is for general surgeons who know how to do a procedure, either laparoscopically or open, and there's a huge training process.
It's supposed to be.
Supposed to be, right.
And to be honest with you, I mean, there was a pretty significant legal issues where the marketing people at Da Vinci did admit that it was really
– So they got ahead of it.
Yeah,
it was the cart before the horse in that regard as well. I guess that wasn't a great example.
They did say, and this is out there on the internet in perpetuity, that their focus and what they told their salespeople were to focus on less experienced laparoscopic surgeons.
Wow!
So people who really didn't know. I mean, didn't know what the fuck they're doing.
So then I'll just change my perspective. Then it's just history repeating itself again.
Right.
Okay, it's, you know, instead of a great example, it's not.
Yeah.
But I mean, But it's like putting a powerful laser, you know, to resurface skin into the hands of a medical student without any training. I mean, it's just, you're not going to hand him a laser and say, "Oh, go resurface this patient." I mean, he doesn't know the settings, he doesn't know the artistry, he doesn't know how it relates to the skin tone. So there's a mismatch there.
Yeah.
And FUE procedures have gotten a lot more comfortable for the patient. They come out with very, very little discomfort. 90% of our patients don't take a pain pill after a day. They are back in the gym in 3 days.
I had to take one before the show tonight. So.
Well, when the surgeon steps in the room, that's not uncommon. But I think that physicians are confusing that with how easy it is to provide the procedure, and it's not. So I guess, you know, there's a lot to unpack there in that comment from that technician. But I think that's really, really good information to get out to the general public, because it's not Spencer Coburn saying, "Look, you know, this is my Alliance of Hair Surgeons, and this is why." But it's someone who's inside, an insider in the industry, is saying exactly what needs to be said about the intricacies of the process and the procedure. And many of these doctors are being sold a bill of goods, you know, with the device package. If somebody wants to come and learn how to do hair transplant surgery, you know, my door is always open. We have physicians that come in all year round. Sometimes they come in to just observe a day. In fact, it was just a couple weeks ago. You know, I had a friend of mine come in to observe a procedure, and you know, our door is open. We want to share the knowledge and the education, not just of how these different tools are working, but also the artistry and tricky cases. You know, that's why we go and schlep out to the International Society of Hair Restoration Surgery conferences, wherever they may be. You know, Kuala Lumpur. This year it's going to be out here in L.A.
I have to tell you this. I've never performed surgery in my life, and I've seen a lot of surgeries performed. But I know with my gig, there is not a day that is exactly the same. Mm. I couldn't get my light to work.
Right.
The computer didn't work before. I mean, there's always some sort of an issue. So
right. Some gremlin is trying to sabotage you, and even after 20 years of doing this.
Right.
You know?
So I can't even imagine how difficult – it doesn't matter what kind of consultation this person had. As soon as you open that scalp in any way, you go in and take that first punch. That sets the tone.
Yeah.
And every day is going to – you're going to be surprised every day. And anybody who says differently is just a salesman.
That's so true. And every consultation is different.
Right.
I mean, that's one of the fun things I love about talking to patients every day. I mean, I spend a lot of time with my patients. My admin staff says I spend maybe too much time. But I like figuring out, you know, what's the plan going to be with the patient. So there's no question when the patient decides to pull the trigger and say, "Yeah, doc, I want to go forward with this," there's no question in their minds of what they're going to get. Everything is planned out exactly. Hey, look, if you know you're going to need 2 or 3 procedures to get this job done to reach your goal, okay, well, that's what's going to be. And here's the timeline. Here's our estimate, how many grafts we think we're going to be able to get. And and it's a variability. There's things that can go wrong and there are things that can go great. Just last week, we got nearly 2,000 grafts from a small stealth procedure with FUE. It was completely hidden under the guy's existing hair. There's no way I could have predicted we were going to get 2,000 grafts from that small zone. And it was great. He had a great density. He lucked out. We didn't have to shave another area. It was just phenomenal.
And I don't mean to cut you off, but nobody could predict any of this.
Right.
So when they say it's predictable, or when a company sends a salesperson to sit there and to basically sit in on the surgery, which Joe Tillman has seen himself. And Joe, I mean, and guys, I'm sorry. Hold on. I'll take your call in 1 second. 888-659-3727. Joe, I mean, you can share the experience when you were in the doctor's office if you want. And there was essentially a salesperson or a counselor in there saying, you know, move on with this procedure, even though it wasn't working out. I know that you actually were in a witnessing a robotic procedure. And there was a salesperson that was there that essentially was not only saying these things in front of the patient, but was trying to make essentially, you know, medical decisions for the first physician.
Wow.
Well, this person was making medical decisions and was trying to encourage the procedure to move forward. And there was – Well, first off, what I didn't like is that the discussion was happening right there in front of the patient. The patient was laying in the position that they lay for the procedure, and the discussion was going on as if – I mean, I was shocked. And this rep was even debating
– Your volume is high. Sorry.
With a physician about how to move forward. And I didn't say anything because I didn't want to add to the potential drama in front of the patient. Because
let me tell you something: when you're burying grafts and the physician notices and says something, and the salesperson says to keep going, don't worry about those buried grafts. I think there's a problem there.
Oh yeah!
Wow, that's craziness.
Yeah.
Oh, it was insane. I mean, I'm still kind of, you know, shocked by it because, I mean, I haven't thought about it in a while. So when you bring it back up for me to go back over, it's like, wow, I did actually go through that and experience that. It wasn't just like,
oh, we're going to go back and get those after this grid is completed or something needed to be adjusted. I mean, obviously, I have the robot, so I know, look, as we talked about, not every case goes as planned. But if something is happening the robot, first of all, if it's not getting the grafts, the robot knows, right? It's semi-autonomous.
Right.
It's going to make adjustments. And if it keeps going and you're still having problems, then something needs to switch. You know, you need to either go a larger punch or make manual adjustments. And that's the beauty of flying it, you know, literally right on the spot while you're there in the OR.
Well, let's put it this way. If this doctor didn't know what he was doing and he does know what he's doing, this patient would have been destroyed.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the doctor was able to make the right decisions to reset the parameters and make the changes. And because he understood the nuances of hair transplant surgery, another doctor would have just pressed go and let it keep, you know, doing what it's doing.
The basic message or encouragement was keep trying. Mm-hmm. Keep trying. Try it again. Try it again. And the doctor actually had to say at one point, you know, I'm not interested in trying again. Let's switch to a different method.
Right. And, I mean, having multiple tools in the practice, you know, that's another benefit of having different tools available. If the robot is not working, then we can switch. We can switch to manual if you let's set them up in the other room, and I'll get out the smart graft or the neograft.
It's not even just the robot. If for some reason if someone's using a safe system and the scalp is too mushy, that's not working.
Right.
Let's switch to a cold system.
Right.
You
switch something else. Exactly.
That's all it is. And that's why I'm trying to explain to these guys, listen, if you're going to make an investment, sometimes it might be better to start small, invest in several different devices, learn, understand what you're doing, and then kind of graduate to the more expensive devices. And that's kind of the way, you know, Dr. Bauman did it. Listen.
Right. Well, that's what we did. I mean, I devised the process that we use today is really from 1 millimeter biopsy punches that were plastic and awkward in 1999 and didn't really work well.
Like you to speak about that for a second because you don't get credit for actually inventing or manufacturing the first tool for FUE extraction.
That is correct. So the Bauman Mindex was the first device. It was a manual device you would spin between your fingers that enabled surgeons to get the FUE grafts out of the scalp. And actually, some of them were sharp and some of them came directly from the manufacturer, kind of blunt. And so you can imagine how those sharp and blunt items eventually worked their way into different surgeons' repertoires. But yeah, the Bauman Mindex was the first commercially available instrument specifically designed for FUE.
And what year was this?
It hit the market in 2002.
Okay.
Yeah, 2002.
Well, I know that you and I had a conversation in 1999 about this, and you were one of the first guys to try the Woods technique.
Correct.
And that's completely written out of history books.
I understand.
Not only am I written out, and that's fine, I'm not a doctor, but you're written out of the history books, and I don't understand it.
Dr. Woods is almost written out of the history books.
It's true. It's true. It's very true. Although, you know, he also didn't, understandably, he didn't share his technique with his colleagues and so forth.
Right. Yeah,
I mean, it was kind of behind a curtain, literally, right? His patients didn't even see
the
process.
You did, and you also created this device. So that's not even out there.
Right.
If you read Sam Lam's FUE book, I don't see a single mention of you in that.
Are you specifically talking about the history of the procedure?
Right. Anyway, guys, let's take a phone call. 888-659-3727. Let's see who this is. Hey, you're on the air. Thanks for holding. Who's this and where are you calling from?
This is Rob down in Florida, guys. The token black man. How's it going?
Oh, hey, what's happening, man? You are our number three. Actually, I was thinking – last time I said we've had two black guys who called in. I was reminded, because it's our 20th anniversary, that we had this other guy for a while. And I actually have some sound clips from him that I'll eventually play. But welcome.
Oh, that's proof?
We got to prove that brothers care too. That's the thing. You know?
Black hair matters, man.
Black hair matters, man.
That's funny.
Hashtag brothers too.
That's funny.
So what's up?
So I want to find out from you guys more about the topical finasteride. I keep hearing about it, and I'm somewhat interested to find out if I can get my hands on it. I know it's available in Canada. But Dr. B, I live actually about 15 minutes from your practice, I think, in Boca. And I'm wondering if you guys sell it there.
Well, absolutely. We've been prescribing it for a number of years now, actually. But look, can I ask you, have you used oral finasteride? Propecia?
I have been on oral since September.
Okay. And how, any good effects, any bad effects? What are your thoughts on how it's been working for you?
Well, I haven't had any side effects that I know of. To be honest with you, recently, over the past like week or two, I have had some tenderness in my testicles, and I don't know if that has anything to do with it. I was actually going to see my physician about that. I don't know if that has anything, if there's any correlation between the two. It could be something else. I don't know. But other than that, there's been no sexual side effects or anything like that. If anything, like I was telling Joe a couple of weeks ago, I feel like I'm actually hornier to actually be honest with you. I've actually, you know, had more of a desire, you know, for sex than before. So I don't know if that has any, I don't know if it's just the hormones or what it could be, but that's just my experience.
So there is when you're on finasteride, there is an increase in testosterone because you're blocking the breakdown of testosterone into DHT. So there is an increase in what we, like regular testosterone. Your symptoms, testicular pain, I would encourage you to visit the urologist there. I think Spencer did an entire show about testicular pain on finasteride. Am I correct?
Absolutely. I dealt with it for a long time. I would say that
it keeps coming up on my YouTube channel, so I'm wondering if there's a message there. But when I'm surfing YouTube. But
mine was pretty severe, and it lasted, and there was nobody to talk to about it back then.
Wow.
And except for my, you know, a GP.
Right.
And he just said, ride it out, you know.
Man up.
And did it go away?
It went away.
Okay.
I've been living with testicular pain for 20 years.
Well, you know, to keep your hair, you know, I can understand.
That's true.
So, you know, it's sometimes a given.
Beauty is pain. It's very painful.
And so
like
it was
binding your feet.
So it was a Bald Truth segment or it was a Joe Tillman segment?
It was a Bald Truth segment.
Oh, okay.
It was.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It was both.
But it was both. It was Joe's face as the
Bald Truth on Joe Tillman's live stream.
Oh, okay. Got it. All right. Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, if you're on the finasteride, you may want to just discontinue it for like a week and see. It comes out of your system in a week and see if that changes things, see if it changes the pain. But you can absolutely –
It's not pain just, you know, during the day. Like if I'm like – you know, using the bathroom or something, and or if I'm not the bathroom, if I'm going to take a shower or something and I'm souping up and everything, occasionally I'll feel like a little, you know, prick or something like that. So I'm not sure if I'm going to talk to my doctor about it.
Again, we actually have a physician in the room, so but I'm not here to give medical advice, but is there like a dull ache at all? Like that lasts for a while?
Only if I touch it. It's maybe the part that connects the testicles.
That actually sounds like a swelling of the something with a P. It's
maybe.
What is that?
You're getting closer. Because last episode you're like, it's on the tip of my tongue. I can't remember the name. So now you got the first letter.
It's something with a P, and if you touch it, it hurts. And I've had that before, and it had nothing to do with finasteride.
Penis.
Not penis.
No?
Not penis. Dysentery.
Doc, chime in. What is it?
I mean, I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Somewhere between your prostate and your
well, he's a doctor. I could show you, right?
I work on the other head. Thank you very much. There's a reason why I'm not a urologist.
That's why you brought him into your studio. I see. Yeah.
But we do encourage you to go seek out your urologist.
Any self-promotion is good self-promotion. You know what I'm saying?
The frenulum. It's the frenulum.
It's the what?
The frenulum.
The frenulum.
Yes.
No, it's not.
That's what Dave said in the chat room.
Not peritoneum. No. I don't even know enough to try to Google it. But anyway, it swells. It hurts when you touch it, and the doctor's going to say that you could have a small infection in there, and may be caused by finasteride. Again, I'm not a physician, but usually that's pretty transient.
Okay.
Right. So. Problems with not that it's a problem with finasteride, but it tends to slow down the production of the ejaculate. So, the functioning of the prostate kind of slows down a bit. So patients, and this is extremely rare, prostatitis and some other things can occur. So yeah, I would certainly encourage you to check it out with a urologist, a specialist, and then we can talk about how to if we want to adjust the finasteride dosing, whether it be cold turkey for a week and see if it improves, or try decreasing the dosage or the frequency that you're taking the oral, and supplement that with a topical. There's a lot of different ways to go about it. So I encourage you to come and check it out. If your hair is long enough, we could do a hair check measurement and determine if you're getting a good positive response from the finasteride. I mean, that would, I always encourage anyone going on any kind of hair growth drug, treatment regimen, laser, you name it.
Look,
get a hair check measurement.
But black hair matters, but can you really measure black hair if it's not long enough?
I actually shave down to like maybe a one. So that's the thing. I don't know. You were asking how I was responding to it. To be honest with you, I don't think I've lost any more hair. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, guys. It's the epididymis.
There we go.
Okay.
Epididymitis. That's what it is.
Assist. Yeah. I sent him a picture of the anatomy of the male reproductive organ so he could figure that out.
It's the epididymis. Yeah. And I was actually – I was with Common Law. Don't ask me why she was in the room, but she was in the room while I was getting examined, and I guess I have no shame. And the doctor pushed on this thing. I have never felt anything like that. That was one of the most painful experiences of my life, and I've been through a lot.
Ooh.
If you go to a doctor to get examined, you should ask him not to press it too hard. Because this guy,
go easy.
No, honestly, this guy went for it. And he's like, oh, that hurts, huh?
Does that hurt?
I'm like, yeah, that hurts, motherfucker.
Oh, my.
Jesus.
Now?
Yeah.
Shoot.
He's bringing his nurse. He's like, you got to see this. Look at this.
I've never seen one so small.
That hurt my feelings.
That's terrible.
Dude. Anyway, I would say that, you're so close. And by the way, since you're actually with us, and you're watching, I took the sound off of this, but I think I've never seen a facility like this in my life. Dr. Bauman essentially has a hair hospital that is ridiculous. So I'm going to play this on the air. Let me see if I can get this going. I took the sound off it because I want Dr. B to describe it. Now, he's not going to be able to see.
You just tell me when you start
the video,
I'll
I'm going to let you describe it. Here we go. Go ahead.
So what we've designed and built is nearly 12,000 square feet of everything regarding hair health, scalp health, hair regrowth to treat any patient with any kind of scalp condition, hair loss condition, alopecia, mild to severe. And so what you're looking at is the interior two-story atrium. You can look up and see the skylights upstairs. There's a stairway. Once you've checked in at the front desk with
Gina. Guys, that's all for fucking hair.
Yeah, once you've checked in with Gina, who is my amazing receptionist, she's incredible, been with the practice many, many years. You'll be escorted upstairs to one of the hair check zone rooms, and that's where we'll do our hair check measurements. We'll do a microphotography of the scalp, discuss the issues and risk factors for your hair loss, and of course, for men and for women, We do see about 50-50, equal proportion men and women to the practice. About 1,000 people come into the office per year for evaluation and treatments.
Wow.
And we have five operatories, but we don't operate in every single OR every day. One operatory is specifically for PRP. I have one large teaching OR, which we call the double wide. That's a large OR, OR 1 and 2, set up really for teaching. We've got the latest LED equipment for visualization and, of course, all the greatest tools and devices, NeoGraphs, the latest SmartGraft. We have centrifuges for PRP in every single room. OR number 3 wow. contains the Artist robot, and you can see that online as well, Artie. And we have actually an in-house trichologist and cosmetologist. So we call it Salon B, although it's not a salon inside. We do all of our hair and scalp health exams there too. So if you have a symptom like itchy, flaky, oily scalp, or you're just trying to figure out what kind of shampoo to use, there's a science for that. We can look at scalp pH, moisture level, sebum level, and figure out what is the right kind of products to use. If it's specifically for hair loss or hair regeneration, we have a treatment plan for that. And, of course, it's a multi-therapy, holistic approach, everything from laser light to nutritionals to modification of your lifestyle, even better sleep and better better stress management can help with your hair regrowth. And then there's the prescription topical medications, as we discussed, oral medications, as well as PRP, stem cell therapy using your adipose or fat cells mixed in with the PRP.
This guy's like, look, I just want topical finasteride.
And the latest, yeah. and the latest and greatest in hair transplant. But that's my office, and yeah. We have a robotic shampoo device for cleansing the scalp prior to our procedures. You can see that on wow. the 3D tour as well. So I do encourage you to come by.
The reason I wanted you guys to see it is because there's just nothing like it out there, and that's why it's so important for me when I see these guys. And again, I'm repeating myself. That's why this talk given to these plastic surgeons was so important, because you really have to dedicate your life to this if you want to be really good at it and really give the patient the best possible chance of either having a great hair transplant or the possibility of saving their hair. And the fact of the matter is, not everybody could be helped. That's just the truth. And a doctor has to be able to say that and sit you down and say, hey, look, I'm sorry. I know Morty down the block can get you a good piece. That's it. And, I'm sure you've had to turn a lot of people away, Doc.
Well, that's absolutely true. And, I have the luxury of turning patients away for transplantation if they don't fit certain criteria. And so people sometimes ask me, well, is there an age cutoff? I go, no, but there is a maturity cutoff for sure.
Yes.
But, one of the things that we didn't talk about, and a lot of surgeons don't have the ability to treat alopecia patients, people with alopecia totalis and universalis where they have literally no hair, or extensive scarring alopecias that don't have available donor hair for transplantation. We can treat those patients today with cranial prosthetic devices, 3D printed hair systems, which are amazing, incredible Italian systems that are made in Bologna, Italy, with 240 man hours put into these hair systems, which are incredible. It could give any woman Hollywood hair, so to speak, as long as we're out here in Hollywood.
Yeah, and I've seen them firsthand, and I have to say, they did. Listen, wearing hair for women, especially, it really changes lives. It really, really changes lives, and the women who I've seen either get. And it's Cesar Ragazzi, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Cesare Ragazzi. Yeah. What's called the CNC, Capelle Naturale a Contatto.
He had a one up me with the Italian thing.
Well, I did go visit Bologna. That's the only thing I got.
I love Bologna. It's a great city.
That's all I got. It's amazing what's in the DNA over there in terms of artistry. Watch the precision, whether it's automobile manufacturing or, leather goods and, handbags and shoes, you name it.
But women. But the women. Unbelievable. See, he can't say it because he's married. I am essentially myself, but I could say whatever I want,
You can. I have a beautiful woman at home. 20 years, it'll be this year, 20 years married.
Mazel tov. You know what's scary? It's my 20th anniversary, too, of the Bald Truth, though.
Yes, I know. I was there close to the beginning.
Well,
right?
You were absolutely.
Oh, I think it was within a few months.
Within a few months, all of a sudden, I get this guy calls. He's like, how do I get in? What's going on? But no, honestly, no. I mean, Dr. B was.
I think you called me.
I probably did,
because it was a referral. One of the people who was mentioned in the book,
right?
If you remember,
said to give you a call.
Yes.
Yeah. We were looking for guys who were doing, at the time, the gold standard follicular unit transplantation with the use of microscopes, and there was no one to be found. Mm. It was so ridiculous that people, A, would not listen to Bobby Limmer, and then B, even when Rassman and Bernstein came out and really pushed it, they weren't listening to them. When the Bald Truth came out, everyone was pissed off at me because I was only recommending 11 doctors.
Mm-hmm. And my parents thought I was crazy.
Your parent, yeah.
My uncle thought, hey, isn't there a pill for that?
Right.
You know, I mean, there was like a lot of, you know, there was a lot of uncertainty out there.
Well, my father once said to me when I was begging him for cable television, he's like, who the hell is going to pay to watch television? So I've learned not to listen to people, especially my parents. Anyway, 888-659-3727. Dude, so did we answer all your questions?
Yeah, you answered a lot. So I'll check out your office, Dr. B. You can actually see exactly where I'm at. I'm actually on my 10th month out of my second procedure for FUE transplant.
Oh, great.
And I think I'm going to I'm a perfectionist, and you know, Joe.
You're
going
to do nothing. You're going to sit there and enjoy it, and not be greedy for more hair.
Yeah.
We've talked about this. Don't make me come down there.
Definitely.
But you know, it's always good to get an opinion. It's always good to get another opinion, just to Dr. B can check out and you know see what happened.
Yeah.
And, see what's going
definitely.
On.
I was going to say, after going into Dr. B's new facility, or it's not so new anymore, but his facility, if he can't help you or someone else that goes to him, then no one can. Because this guy, it sounds like it's the Swiss knife of hair hospitals.
Oh, I like that too. Swiss Army knife.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Amazing.
And you can start the consultation process online at BaumanMedical.com. You can ask a question there. It gets started with the paperwork. Just when you go to BaumanMedical.com/schedule-consultation, it'll take you right there.
Perfect.
Or you can call anytime. But it'd be my pleasure to take care of you see what's going
on. Dr. B is in the room, but I'm telling you, do not have another surgery, dude. You had to. You already told us that you're happy.
I won't have another one for at least another year, that's for sure. So I want to see exactly how my hair if there's, you know, how much receding goes from this.
This
point
is
on.
An example, and Dr. B, I told you this. When doctors complain about me trying to talk people out of surgery, you can't talk anybody out of surgery.
Exactly.
Eventually, if they want it, they're going to do it. So it's best that they're well educated.
So you can't talk Joe out of surgery.
You can talk them out of surgery, but the truth is, if you talk them out of surgery, there's a good chance you're going to go down the block and have surgery by somebody else.
Well, I give my opinion. We judge whether it's right to have surgery, whether or not I feel like I can get you a result from the procedure that's visible, exactly. that you will notice. Yeah. You know, if you're concerned about this density or that density, you know, we'll talk about what can be done or what can't be done in those areas.
Definitely.
Have you had any SMP?
Definitely. I haven't, and I've spoken with one doctor about that as well. I've seen Dr. Lupinzula, and I was in Paris about a week ago. I saw him. He told me.
Oh, you were in Paris. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was listening even to you guys when I was over there. I came back from a party at 1 a.m., and the little notification popped up. I was like, oh, shit.
That's really pathetic, dude. You're in Paris, and you're watching the Bald Show.
You're worldwide, man. That's great. That's awesome.
I was on vacation, man. I'm a teacher, so I mean that was my spring break.
Dude, we appreciate your patronage and your loyalty, and
absolutely,
it's great that you are so close to Dr. B, because you know at the very least, have the consultation. Listen, I don't know what's going to happen with your ball pain again. I'm not a physician, but maybe I don't know how Dr. B feels about this, but maybe lowering your dosage and then. You know, supplementing it with topical may be the job, you know, may do the job for you. Who knows?
There's a lot of options. That's the point. The point is there's a lot of options.
Yeah, all right, dude.
Definitely.
All right, dude. Listen.
Thanks for your help, guys.
Dude, always a pleasure.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for calling.
Fellow Floridian.
Thank you.
888-659-3727. Now, do you got any place to go, Dr. B?
No, man. I'm good.
Do you need to take a bathroom break? Anything happening?
No, I'm totally fine.
Okay, because I do. So.
Oh,
but no, I'm
going to go into commercial break.
No, I'll take this call. I'll take this call. Hey, you're on the air. Who's this, and where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Dr. B. Senior. Enjoy the show.
Hey, Dr. B. Senior, how are you, man?
Okay, great. Always informative.
How do my teeth look?
Your teeth look great.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Dr. B. Sr. is a dentist, obviously. Otherwise, I wouldn't have asked him. That would be a weird question to ask just, you know.
Any random call.
Alan's father, how my teeth look. So how's the hair, Dr. B.?
The hair is doing great. Fantastic.
Look, I see you and your wife, Sugar, right?
That's it.
She calls herself
Rose Sugar.
Rose, yeah, Rose Sugar. Sorry, yeah. I see you on Facebook all the time. You look like a happy couple after all these years. How do you guys do it?
Well, the secret is
separate bedrooms,
lots of vacations, good hair, and eat out often.
Eat out often and fall asleep early.
You got it.
Yeah. Well, listen,
we'll be
man.
52 years coming up in June.
Mazel tov. That's incredible, man.
Yeah. A lot of people want to know what the secret is.
Fear of divorce,
especially in this day and age.
Yeah, you don't want to give away half. I get it.
Yep.
I'm just kidding, Doc.
You're terrible.
I'm just kidding. Listen, any questions? Any questions for your son?
No questions. What? But if anybody's got a question, I'm here. I can help out.
Well, so maybe your listeners want to know that my dad was a Norwood 7 before we did his hair transplants almost 15 years ago.
And he was a hair wearer, too.
That's right. My dad wore a hairpiece for many, many years. I remember growing up seeing him struggle with his comb over and then some lotions and potions and then eventually the hair system. And I'm blessed with the opportunity to help him grow his full head of hair back using hair transplant surgery.
Now I'm curious. I mean, I know you said that your parents said you're crazy, your uncle or whoever. Did your dad's experience in watching his struggles, did that influence you in any way?
Oh, well, absolutely it influenced me. I mean, I didn't know at the time when I was watching my dad struggle with his hair that I was going to be able to help him or even that was something that was medical that we could treat. And I think back in the, you know, in the 80s, you know, there were very limited options at that time. But it did color my attitude and my emotions towards it. In fact, I loved my hair and I didn't want to go through a hair loss process. And I was always fearful that maybe that would happen to me. And when I took the genetic test and found out that I was passed along the hair loss gene, you know, I was fearful.
I remember that. You were like in a deep depression. You were wearing that T-shirt with mustard stains for a while.
but obviously, knowing how important it was, many of your listeners don't know that I grew my hair long in medical school. And there's some photo around there hanging around on the internet somewhere with me and my long hair playing guitar. But the point is that it definitely was part of my education about learning about hair loss and knowing what the effect was. And it was just a great experience being able to help my dad transition out of the hair system at that time and get his hair back.
Well, listen,
I mean, that was really fun to do. I mean, I don't know if it was fun for my dad to go through it in those early days. I mean, you know.
Well, this is no.
It's the practice of hair transplant. You know, we've gotten better.
I'm not stroking you, Doc, because you're in the studio. But the truth is, and I wouldn't say anything if this wasn't true. I saw the before and afters. I saw all the work you did for your dad. Now, your dad obviously had both strip and FUE, right?
Correct. His first three procedures were strip.
And now he looks as though he has a relatively full head of hair. If not a very full head of hair for a guy's age, especially. So what are you about, like 58, Doc, or?
How old?
I'm just kidding.
77.
Look, man, I'm about to be 53, okay? And you're probably thinking that's a young man. I don't think that way at this point in my life. I'm starting to feel it, a little bit in the back. When did you start to feel your age, Doc, or do you feel your age at all?
I still don't feel my age.
That's great.
And the hair gave me 20 years younger.
That's awesome.
And nobody believes the numbers. We were away for vacation, and I had a T-shirt with my birthday and 77 and my name. And everybody said, you're not 77. There's no way. I said, well, I bought the shirts at half price. You know, it had 77. But, you know, it's the compliments I get, and it's life-changing.
Yeah, that's great. Well, listen, it's always good to hear your voice. You haven't called the show in a few years. I have a feeling like either a little birdie told you that you were on or, you know.
Well, yeah, the Twitter. I didn't even tell. I don't think I told you. Unless he saw it on
regular,
that's the little birdie.
The show.
He may have seen it on my itinerary.
Yeah.
Nice visitor today.
All right, man. Well, listen, thanks for the call. Say hi to your wife. And
I sure will.
It's always nice hearing you.
Love you, Dad. I'll talk to you later.
Take care.
Okay.
All
take
right.
care.
Phone number is 888-659-3727. Guys, we're going to take a quick break. Because I can't play a lot of my production or music because we're on YouTube now, it's going to be a very quick break. So we'll be back in about a minute and a half. I'm Spencer Coburn. You are listening to The Bald Truth and watching The Bald Truth. Actually, I don't think you're listening now because this is an impromptu broadcast that we're just doing on Joe Tillman's YouTube page and also on The Bald Truth and on Bald Truth Talk. So we'll be right back after this. Stay with us.
He's an international best-selling author, a contributing editor for Consumer Digest magazine, and the host of the longest-running reality radio show for men. I'd say he's the man.
The truth!
I'll set you free!
It's Spencer Coburn's The Bald Truth. 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 Truth.
Now the world don't move.
What time does the show come on? Nine where? Well, what's the name of the show? And what's the name of him? Okay. Well, turn it on, man. Jesus. Okay. All right, is it recording? Okay. Hey there, this is Gary Coleman. I don't have any idea what this is about, but you're watching. What? No, not watching. Let me do that again. Take two. Hey, this is Gary Coleman. I have no idea what this is about, and I think people just need to learn to respect themselves and other people respect who's bald. You're listening to The Bald Truth. That's two. All right, fine, but this is it. Otherwise, he's going to have to go in his wallet. All right, here you go. Take three. Ready? This is Gary Coleman, and you're listening to Spencer Coburn on The Bald Truth.
Hey, guys, welcome back. 888-659-3727. Had to take a quick piss break and got another beer. And I tell you, Joe, let me put all of our mics on. I've been doing this intermittent fasting thing,
yep,
which I think I talked to you about.
Mm-hmm.
You really can't drink when you're doing that.
No.
It doesn't.
If you're going to be on like a podcast or something.
Well, when I opened the show tonight, I was like, well, plus with all, everything was like really harried and just trying to deal with, you know, all the
gremlins.
Yeah, the gremlins. I kind of felt like, huh. I really probably should have had some food. I was just going to have dinner, you know. But anyway,
well,
before I go on, I want to – and I don't want to spill this. I want Dr. B to explain what this is because I was given something that I'm very proud of actually receiving. I don't know if you guys can see this. Dr. B, I'm putting you on camera. Maybe you could explain what this is.
So what we've acknowledged The Bald Truth as a Bauman Alliance member. And, you know, for all the hard work that you've done, Spencer, over the past 20 years, educating consumers, educating potential patients, educating those who are out there suffering with a hair loss affliction, this is just a sign of our gratitude. We have similar philosophies and core values, and we wanted to acknowledge you with this plaque tonight. To make you a part of the Bauman Alliance.
Well, I really appreciate that.
Yeah, and the Bauman Alliance members, there's a bunch of them. You can go to the website and see that you're in great company. Many of them are leaders in the field, medical device manufacturers, educational persona, and people at large. So it's an elite group of Bauman Alliance members, and we look forward to just working together with you to continue the mission.
Well, I can tell you this. I've accepted this. I did not accept the Michelangelo Award from the Italian Society of Hair Restoration Surgeons because I wasn't a doctor. This makes a lot more sense to me. And honestly, I'm really honored and I really appreciate it. And it's a lot better than the Facebook message I got from a doctor who was concerned about me accepting more physicians in his local state in his local area. I mean, it's unbelievable to me.
It's terrible.
It's just like, guys, look at what we do every day. Look at the amount of work that I've put into this. My entire career has been focused on trying to truly educate the consumer, give them the best possible, you know, give them a fucking fighting chance so they're not destroyed out there.
Yep.
And all these guys care about is leads and ROI. They don't think about the VOI and the attachment of being a part of what we do. And, you know, the fact that Dr. Bauman has not only been an accepted member since like 1999 or something like that.
Must be 99, yeah.
Yeah.
One of the first members.
Yeah, one of the first members. Believe me, he doesn't need the leads. He's not doing it for the leads. He believes and supports what we do. And he supports truth in advertising. And he thinks that, you know, the IHRS and the American Hair Loss Association, as he said at the beginning of the show, are important entities in this field if consumers want to find a safe place. That's it. You know, everything else is just gravy. And I wish some of these guys would – even guys that I've been working with for 15 years, they'll still every once in a while say – look, man, you know, I mean, can you give me a discount? You know, business is slow. It's like, Jesus Christ. Come on, man. Look what you're getting and look what we're doing. You're supporting something that's really good.
Well, I think that, you know, I don't know how Dr. B discusses IHRS in his practice. I can assume.
Don't you ever tell me to hang on my own show.
That he probably uses it the same way that I used it when I was a consultant, and that is to distinguish himself from the competition and to say, you know, we are a member of IAHRS because of blah blah blah, this, and you know, the entity that you're also considering, you know, do they meet these standards or, you know, some sort of approach like that. Obviously, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. B, but I can imagine that's the way that you would use it because that's the way I feel it should be used.
Well, I consider the IHRS as the top credential in the field, and it wouldn't be there after my board certification designation, after my MD and my name in my signature if I didn't think it was that important. So,
well said. Well,
but my point is this. It's not about patting myself on the back. It's about don't you think it's time we just build alliances?
Absolutely.
You know, instead of just, you know,
there's always been hyper competition in the field, and that's just the way that it is.
Yeah, but that's the point. We have there's no competition when it comes to our message. Our message is consumers first. We want doctors to know what the F they're doing. If they're delegating surgery, we want to make sure that you know, whoever they're delegating surgery to is well trained. I prefer someone who has a full-time staff. As you do.
Makes a big difference for sure.
Right.
You have total control.
Right.
Total control.
And, you know, people who really have seen.
And accountability, right?
And accountability.
Control and accountability. If you have someone who's coming in helping you out one day, once a month, twice a month, and then leaving, there's no accountability there.
No. And that's exactly right. And, you know, I have, and I'm going to be putting some segments up in the next, you know, week or so. From this undercover tech telling me things that would make the hair on the back of your neck stand up. And patients have absolutely no clue that this is going on every single day. There are technicians who will throw tissue away because they want to go home.
That's unbelievable.
Can you believe that? You know? And the hangover factor. People, you know, these are traveling technicians. They're hanging out in hotel bars. They're getting loaded the night before, and then they're basically performing surgery. This person actually said that most of her cases now, especially for the last 2 or 3 years, or I think maybe the last year and a half, she said, are with physicians who absolutely don't even know how to delegate. They don't know what's going on at all. She walks into the room, and essentially they're like, we sold them 2,200 grafts. Do your thing.
Go. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. So I don't know how well received that's going to be, but I really think it's time. Listen, the ISHRS doesn't want to do it. They continue to talk about making changes. They recently changed the terminology of FUE, which you and I discussed. I don't think it's going to make a hill of beans. It's not going to make any difference. I understand some people have the point of view where it could appear that a minimally invasive procedure is a little scarier. But I don't
Spencer,
really – Yeah, go ahead.
They're making change. How could – they changed the name to excision. That is progress.
If you didn't have a straight face, I would think you're joking. But no. Here's the thing. You know, when I was asked about
any
this,
change, I want to be on the record that any change is good change.
Well, I'm
no, it is.
I agree, and I actually said that I would support the change. I was asked if I would support it through the IHRS, which I thought was kind of comical, since they don't really respect the IHRS, but they know that I'm out there. But the point is, it doesn't make a difference. There's no patient, in my view, that's going to say, think, wait a second. It used to be a follicular unit extraction. Now it's called follicular unit excision.
I better see a doctor about this.
Yeah, I better see a doctor about this. There must be a big difference here. It's going to be FUE, the same as it always has been. I don't think it's going to make any change whatsoever. I understand as far as potentially a legislative point of view where it may be more – understandable to state medical boards if, you know, there are people who want to eliminate technicians from doing the surgery. But I still don't think it's going to make a difference. I hate to say it. But I think you're right, Dr. B. I think any change is good. And I think that was very well said and very diplomatic.
You leave it to Dr. B to be the voice of positivity. I like it.
Well, he's a positive
dude.
Yeah, he is.
I don't know how to be any other way, so it is what it is. What you got from me?
Yeah,
that's what you're gonna get.
We're the two cynics here, so it's nice to have you in here. I got a question though. If we can kind of change tempo here. Speaking of the Italy Award,
it was actually the Michelangelo Award, but
or the Michelangelo Award being in Italy. There's a doctor in Italy named Dr. Brotzu that is using this. I forgot the name of the application, but it was the miracle cure for alopecia areata. You may have seen it, where it's basically an anti-inflammatory application. And he's taking this and he's creating his own lotion. It's called Brotzu lotion. That's supposed to be what a lot of people online are hoping, as everyone does, will be the closest thing to a cure, where you rub it on their scalp and your hair will come back. Now, I've been looking into it, and I don't see any sort of literature, any sort of reference to anything that is unusual. I can't remember the name of the active ingredient that was involved in that alopecia areata presentation, but you may or may not know what I'm talking about. But I don't see anything major here, and I was wondering if you knew anything about this and if you could share that.
Well, I basically it's the two anti-arthritic drugs that they were using for alopecia areata.
So tofacitinib and ruxolitinib.
Ruxolitinib.
Yeah, that's it.
Zeljans and
exactly.
Yeah,
and again, I know you asked Dr. B, but I'm going to chime in here. But essentially, you're dealing with what was always thought to be an autoimmune process or disease. So it only makes sense that something that treats arthritis, which is considered to be an autoimmune disease, would, you know, that the fact that it worked kind of, you know, it's understandable. And for some people, it was a complete miracle. Now, there's obviously going to be side effects like with any other drug. But I think for a lot of people with alopecia areata, universalis, and totalis, they're going to be willing to take that risk.
For sure. So what we know is those JAK inhibitors, that's the category of drugs that we're talking about, are very strong anti-inflammatories. And that's why they basically shut down the inflammation of rheumatoid arthritis, plaque psoriasis of the scalp, and alopecia areata.
Don't they also shut down the immune system?
Yeah. So, you know, risk of catching cold and dying.
Right.
No, I don't know for sure, but you can imagine what are the side effects of shutting down your immune system.
But there are guys out there who would be saying, I'm willing to take that risk.
There are guys out there that would be like the boy in the bubble to get their hair back, you know.
Right.
So.
Right. So, I mean, what's interesting is you know, there's a lot of research that's being done here in this part of the world. Angela Cristiano.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. easy for you to say. And even Dr. Tosti down in my neck of the woods doing a lot of alopecia areata studies, totalis and universalis. So, and it's all going around with the JAK inhibitors. And Angela Cristiano even said that she was getting some improvements in androgenetic alopecia. So we'll have to see. You know, we'll see what the research shows. It's not so easy to get our hands on that. At least I haven't been able, you know, to really prescribe it to a lot of patients because it is extremely expensive. And you really have to – in order for you to be on Xeljanz or the other, ruxolitinib or tofacitinib, you have to have a diagnosis of rheumatoid arthritis.
Yeah.
And they're very careful. And even in those cases, only part of it is covered by insurance. It's a big copay.
Well, I can tell you this, that in my view, and we have a doctor in the house literally, unless there's a component of an autoimmune component to male pattern baldness that I am not aware of, then I can't necessarily see this working for MPB.
I don't think it's going to be a miracle cure. Now there are some studies that show that there's microinflammation at the follicle and male pattern, female pattern hair loss, and I think that's why, for example, our formula 82M with it has minoxidil retin-A and a little bit of fluocinolone in there. I think that's one of the reasons why it works very well. It tends to shut down some of the inflammation that could impair the functioning of the hair follicle. So I think there's something to that. There is definitely some microinflammation that's going on. I just don't think that's going to be the hammer that drives the nail.
Right.
I would kind of think that if you could just control the inflammation through diet, that would probably be pretty beneficial.
Well, that goes with what I was saying in the past where
don't drink Coronas when you are fasting.
Pretty much.
Yeah, go ahead.
Alternating with Red Bull.
Yeah.
But yeah, exactly. But no, I mean that kind of reflects back on when I was doing my keto, almost like the caveman diet thing where I was cutting out all the sugars, which are horrible for you and
pro-inflammatory, right?
Pro-inflammatory
stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and my hair felt better than it ever felt in my adult life.
Really?
Okay. Oh, that's yeah. Good. It was. I mean, I'm still kind of on that style of
Have
of
you
nutrition.
Guys met in person, by the way?
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you've seen Joe's hair in person. It's amazing. This guy was like a Norwood 8 never coming back. You know, I mean, he was done at a young age.
8.33, thank you.
It's a miracle.
It
looks good. It's good.
But it really is a miracle. He's right about that. Yeah. I mean,
I think San Francisco, right? Were you in San Francisco?
I was, but last time we saw each other was Vegas.
Vegas, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
But
there was some Japanese scotch involved.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Yamazaki.
There's always some sort of scotch involved with these meetings. Let's put it that way. Yeah. I was about to say something else, but yeah.
But yeah, so where was I?
What I was saying
is – anti-inflammatory diet, growing your hair great, looking good, feeling good.
Before you finish that, I do think it's important that – and there are guys who contact us and they're always like, wow, Joe's hair looks terrific. It does. But you are the anomaly, dude. That's just the way that it is, and people don't understand that. So when there are companies out there that are putting out images like yours – and say, okay, here's a 5,000 graph case or a 4,000 graph case. And everyone, you know, they put out all these home runs. Sadly, there's a lot of disappointment, let's put it that way, online. And I think that the average hair transplant surgeon who's putting out their content online should probably show more of their average patients, more of their average cases. I don't know if you agree with that, Dr. G.
Oh, I absolutely agree with that. In fact, in-office slideshow, which is more like a Flickr album that kind of runs on an Apple TV, there's a huge variety of different cases that are in that slideshow. And I think it's super helpful because patients always want to know, like patients just think that we deal bare to hair all the time.
Yeah.
And that most of our patients are completely bald before they have the work done. And obviously that's totally not the case, even though we do a lot of that work, my dad included and so forth. But I think it's really nice to be able to show the patient in the consultation room as these photos are going by. Here's an example of one surgery in this area, and you can see where he might need a little touch-up. So this relates to your case. I'm talking to the patient. In this area, you might need two procedures because your hair is pretty straight or it's pretty dark compared to your skin tone, you know? So it engenders that conversation, and it triggers it, actually, because it's not all the most amazing, spectacular hair restoration results you've ever seen. It's a variety of both genders, variety of ages, and hair loss patterns. And so it enables us to talk about all of those in-between cases and maybe why your case is a little bit different than the average.
It's so powerful. It's really important. What bugs me the most is when I see guys posting online, and we don't allow this on Bald Truth Talk, but, you know, for several reasons. But one, you know, if someone signs off on their images, that means they're happy mm-hmm. with their work. So why allow someone's, you know, I mean, they spent thousands of dollars. They're happy enough to sign off and say, you know what? I'm so happy with my work. I don't mind if you showcase my face forward online, and then someone shits on them. A lot of these guys are like, you know, let's see the crown. Oh, that work looks too thin. That's what hair transplant is. That's right. Just the way that it is. People expect these thick, dense hairlines when it's possible. You guys can produce that. But for the most part,
it's not necessary.
It's not necessary, yeah. But also it happens. It happens in stages, also. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. You know, there are patients that have interesting conversation. There are patients that have signed off on their hair restoration results. Who I thought they looked spectacular at the time, and obviously maybe the patient thought they did too. And then later on, they decided that they weren't happy with it.
Isn't that interesting?
So,
you know, it's actually really. But it saddens me, really, because
I've gotten some heat on that.
It saddens me because these guys they actually were happy, and there are people out in the world who are willing to just, you know, destroy somebody's self-esteem.
Yeah.
For what? Just to prove that they may know something, or they, you know, have some sort of an expert eye, or, you know, Joe, you've been in the field for a long time. You've been in the trenches online for a long time. Mm-hmm. You are somebody who.
Yeah, Joe, can't you explain why people are mean?
Yeah. Exactly. You were somebody who initially –
You mean just on Twitter, right?
Who initially kind of engaged in this stuff, not saying that you were mean, but you were like willing to battle it out with people where I wasn't. I made that choice a long time ago. Sure. I am not going to – deal with that shit.
I was a son of a bitch. Are you kidding me?
I was like anyone could talk – you know, people have talked shit about me forever. I'm just like I'm not even there. I don't – it's like it doesn't even exist. It doesn't happen.
Well,
but you're a different guy.
A lot of the negativity is just because – well, there's two reasons. Ulterior motives, and people just like to spew shit because they're behind a keyboard. Mm. There's no accountability for anonymous
– keyboard cowboys.
Right. Keyboard cowboys, exactly. Yeah. And you know, you see it on Twitter. You see it on YouTube. Like with my videos on YouTube, I mean, holy shit, man! There's some really nasty comments that even YouTube is like, we need to put this into, you know, review.
Dude, I had a guy who actually,
but it doesn't bother me.
Who actually,
he can't let it bother you. I mean, but it's just shocking. I think that how nasty people could be for really no good apparent reason.
Really, I've been called wig boy. I've been called what else? I'm a propitious. I'm a merc shill. I'm out there trying – I'm actually poisoning people. You know, I mean, just terrible things.
Well,
that actually,
it's
for
like,
some reason, make me laugh.